And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. As the end of the week, it will be rookie minicamp. So this week we will start to get into the rookies, what they will bring to the table, as well as some of the undrafted rookies that will be invited to camp, but nothing is official at this point. But we're also going to start to dig deep into the roster. The draft is over, so now all of a sudden, the Giants are going to expand their roster to 90 as they make their way to 53. So today's topic is going to focus on the running back competition, and we want to know, with Ben McAdoo saying that Paul Perkins is in line to be the starting running back, do you want it to be a running back by committee even though Perkins is in line to be the starter? Do you think that the Giants should still add perhaps a veteran running back? Those are two questions we want to hear from you as we move forward here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. And it was Ben McAdoo in his interview with WFAN the other week, Paul, that did come out and clearly say that Paul Perkins right now is penciled in to be the starting running back. And Perkins actually spoke to our very own Dan Salamone on Giants.com, and this was his reaction when he was told of what Ben McAdoo said. He goes, quote, "So right now I'll just take it for what it is, but I'm not losing sight of the competition," end quote.
Remember one thing about Paul Perkins: his dad and his uncle played football, and so he grew up in a football house, a football family, a football atmosphere. He knows darn well you're only as good as your last snap. And if he doesn't know that by now, then his eyes have been closed for his entire life, because I'm sure that he is totally understanding and totally on board with the fact that you've got to earn everything you get on the football field. And I'm sure he has lived that way ever since he was a toddler. So I'm not surprised by the reaction. I'm also not surprised by the humility and the humble attitude of Paul Perkins, who I really enjoyed being around last year as a rookie. He was waiting his time. He understood full well that Rashad Jennings was going to be the lead guy, if at all possible. They were still going to lean on him as the lead guy. And he was perfectly willing to wait his turn, and when he got the opportunity the final month of the season, he certainly showed some nice flashes.
Well, and it's understandable that he had to wait his turn, because remember, similar to Adrian Robinson, another former Giants draft pick out of Cincy, because of the UCLA schedule, he did not arrive with the rest of the rookies. So Perkins was playing catch-up. So he understood, even during training camp, though, he was still understanding the jargon of the offense and so forth. But to me, what stood out, Paul, was I think you started to see the transition in the later stages of 2016 when Perkins took on a larger role.
Yes.
The last four games into the playoff game against the Packers, and the production also increased with a bigger role. It's one thing to get more carries. It's another thing to turn those carries into production.
I want to say over the final month or so of the season, he must have averaged about 15, 16 touches a game.
I'm going to bring up the numbers, but
he did. And they were productive touches. There's no question about that. And he added some life and pep and zest to the Giants offense. Now, of course, in the game against the Packers in the playoffs, he had a bit of a stumble.
Yeah.
And as Eli Manning has said, and I do think that Paul Perkins qualifies as one of the guys he was talking about, and Eli, to his credit, will never name names. He'll never throw anybody under the bus and never call anybody out. But you remember, Eli, just a few weeks ago, told us as the media when the Giants reconvened for their offseason program that I think going to the playoffs was a big deal for a bunch of young guys who had never been there before. They needed to understand what it is. They needed to experience it. And we think we're going to be better prepared this year going in, because you have to go through it once. You have to breathe it. You have to touch it, feel it, live it. And I think Paul Perkins is one of those guys that he probably was alluding to, because it did look like, you know, Paul was not the same player who had played down the stretch of the regular season and had played with confidence and had played with some zest and some pizzazz, and obviously was very productive in doing it. That day in Green Bay in that playoff game, he just wasn't the same guy.
In that playoff game, 10 carries, 30 yards. To go back to your previous question, he had double-digit carries in the final four games of the regular season plus the playoff game. And I would say 15 is a fair average. He had 15, 11, 15, 21 in the final four games. But he had 45, Rushing yards, 56, 68, and then 102. So the point is the numbers increased every single week. And you want to say, well, that was because of the competition. I mean, they played a variety of different teams down the stretch. They played division rivals. They played playoff-bound teams. It was really a mix and match of teams' ability to stop the run.
I don't think the Packers were a great defense by any means in that playoff game, but I do think that their experience, and it was one thing that I was a bit wary about going into the game, to be honest with you, Lance, is that we talked about it. The Giants had so few guys who had been to the playoffs before on their roster. And the Packers had virtually everybody because they'd gone to the playoffs, I think, 6 years in
a
row.
Yeah, consistent.
I mean, if there's one thing that I have learned over the course of time of watching this game and being around it for many decades, it's that postseason experience does count for something when there is such a dramatic difference in the two teams. If both teams have 5 or 6 guys or 10 guys, or one team has 8, another team has 12, it's usually not a big deal. But when one team has virtually their whole roster as playoff experience and playoff tested, and the other team has virtually nobody, and they're all newbies, and they're all as green as celery at the supermarket, now it does have an impact on the game.
Which is why now looking forward, the experience that last year's rookie class got.
No question.
And the reps they got down the stretch is now hopefully going to benefit this class moving forward here into 2017. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're starting to focus in on themes within the roster as they narrow it down to 53 at the conclusion of training camp. And today we're focusing on the running back position. But with that being said, we're going to open up the phone lines. If you want to delve into just about anything, including this year's rookie class, feel free to give us a ring at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. But the two big questions is, Ben McAdoo indicated Paul Perkins is in line to be the starter. Even with that being said, do you want to see more of a backfield by committee with Perkins and then somebody else splitting carries? And do you think that maybe they should consider bringing in another running back, such as an established veteran, as they get closer to some more off-season workouts as well as training camp? So let's open up the phone lines, get the dialogue going on the lines. We got Dre in Atlanta, who starts activities off here on Monday's edition of BBKL. What's happening, Dre?
What's going on, Lance? Hey, P-Dot.
Hey.
Hey, feeling like I'm that leadoff hitter again. Yankees could have used him in the ninth inning last night, but that's all right. Here's my thing. I went ahead and looked at the, you know, anatomy of the film again and looked at, you know, the offensive line play when it came to Paul Perkins against all the other teams in the league, especially the playoff game against Green Bay. What it seems to me, it seems like that I don't want to do the running back by committee because there's no continuity between the running backs and the linemen. If you go that route, because it seemed like they run off a rhythm, and the same thing with the offensive line. As they start gelling, they have to have that continuity with the running backs. Now, would I like to see a power back, a more established power back? Yes, but who knows what Gilman will be able to give us once he has to get on the field? I have to see it for myself. But as of right now, it's Paul Perkins' job to lose, you know. But he's young and he can only get better. And I guess with more snaps and more opportunities goes to confidence. What do you say about that?
Well, I think that the Giants do need a thumper. They don't have a guy who weighs more than 220 pounds even after a three-course meal in that backfield. And that, for me, is a problem because despite the fact that I've been preaching, I think this Giants offensive line is going to be improved this year. I don't know how much. None of us do. And when you have a thumper back there, when you have a Derek Ward back there at 240 pounds, or you have a Brandon Jacobs back there at 260, you know what? On a 3rd-and-1, even if the blocking isn't just so, they can push that pile and they can get that first down. They can move the chains in that situation or get the touchdown, if you will, inside the 1 yard line when the blocking is not exactly the way it's supposed to be. That's my problem right now because I can't tell you that in every short yardage situation this year, the Giants' offensive line is going to block it the way it's supposed to be done. And so I want to know that the guy who's going to get the ball is going to be able to force his way to that first down or force his way to the goal line. I don't feel that way right now with any of the Giants' running backs.
Well, I have no problem with what you just said, Paul. I mean, if they do want to add perhaps an established veteran late who can handle those goal line short yard situations, that's fine. But, I mean, I agree with what you were saying, Dre, and I go back to Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, after the 2015 season. So entering last season, he made it clear that one of the things they were trying to work out and avoid for doing again in 16 was having this backfield by committee where, remember, at 15 they alternated running backs per game. Remember that, Paul? Mm-hmm. Darkwa got a start against the Cowboys, or he was heavily involved. Jennings was involved. Shane Vereen. Game to game, the carries varied. Last year, we got more to a situation where Jennings was the consistent guy. Then at the end of the season, Perkins became the consistent guy. But notice, when you gave Perkins 21 carries, he had 102 yards. He had nearly 5 yards per carry. So I am, for one who subscribes to the school of philosophy, Dre, like you, when you give one running back the majority of the carries, they tend to get more into a rhythm. They tend to get more comfortable. And then you work in a receiving back or somebody, like you said, Paul, third and one. You want to pound it up the gut. Maybe you bring somebody else in. But I think Perkins is more than capable of getting that 16 to 17 carries a game. And if they want to mix in Shane Vereen and a bigger back, I think that could work out.
Well, you know, I think the thing that we want to identify, if you're the Giants, you want to identify, you know, how they're going to get. If Vereen's going to be the third down guy, so he's going to get, I don't know, 10 snaps, 12 snaps a game.
With a
third
mix
down.
Of receptions slash runs.
You know, I don't know how many times he's going to touch it.
But he's in that ballpark, that's fine.
Yeah, but he's going to be in the game, let's just say 12 times a game, third down conversions, because it's going to be anything that's third and longer than three. Right?
Yeah, because Perkins could handle some of those third and threes, okay. Third and fours, too. I wouldn't take him out of the game. He could catch the ball.
So what you got to figure out, if you're going to get, nowadays teams are getting 70 snaps a game. Okay, so what I want to ask you as a caller is, how would you like to divide the snaps, not just the touches, but the snaps? Because if you're going to go with Perkins as the lead guy, well, let's see now. We're going to give, 12 to 15 snaps maybe to Vereen. We're going to give the short yardage guy and the goal line guy, I don't know, is he going to get 10 snaps?
I think that may be high.
You think it might be high?
I think 10 may be high, yeah. On average, I would say lower for that run.
I'll tell you exactly how I'll break it down.
All right, let me know.
Everything is based on situational rhythm, based on the scheme. So depending on what the situation, what's on the clock, and what we're doing. Since Perkins is our starting back, you can always start the rhythm with him. Then you could give him the first series and see how it goes in there. And to give him a breather for a couple series, you could throw in. So I say give him 18. Vereen, you give him 18, and you can give whoever the complimentary back is, you can give him 10 to 12 and mix it in based on what's going on. Because but keep it as a three back rotation. If Perkins is, and what they kind of did it with Rashard Jennings, if Perkins is ineffective in reference to the particular scheme because they schemed well against him, then you may be able to use Gilman. Gilman may have more success. So you can rotate the snaps between the three running backs based on the scheme and the situation. Because one thing I tell you about Perkins, you know, everyone talks about Ereck Flowers, but if you look at this past season, the entire line had some deficiencies, and especially against Washington, Richburg missed a critical block that could have ended in a 7-yard loss, but Perkins made the defensive tackle miss, and he took it for 13 yards. So his ability to see and his elusivity can make things happen. So based on his progress and how the scheme is going and how the game is going in the flow, because you know we still have to throw the ball. So depending on what goes on, I think you can rotate it between the three backs and you can still get that same continuity. If they're on the flow, keep them on the field. If they need a breather, you can bring the other back in and then bring them in and out. And we could work it out that way. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Dre. Appreciate the call. I think that's fair. And I'm fine with three running backs divvying up the snaps, as you alluded to, and some of what Dre mentioned. But, I mean, I don't think you have to go into every single game saying we've got to find ways to utilize these running backs, because then that's when I think you get into trouble where you're just trying to get playing time for everybody and you're sacrificing rhythm as a result. So if they have certain running backs with defined roles and then depending on the scheme and the game situation, they can find a way to certainly work them in. But, I mean, Perkins, as I I mentioned, once he received double-digit carries last season, I don't think it was a coincidence that the numbers went up, and I would agree with Dre's observation, Paul, that he does have the elusivity to, even when things break down, and you want to have a running back that could do this, Paul, mm-hmm. when maybe the blocking is not where it should be, he has the ability to create more open space and then get positive yardage as opposed to settling for a loss of two.
I'm going to give you some numbers here. 2008 New York Giants, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Ward, Jacobs, and Bradshaw. Jacobs averaged 17 touches a game. Ward, 14 touches a game. They both ran for 1,000 yards. Bradshaw was the change of pace back, only averaged about 5 touches a game. That's how they broke it down. Ward, of course, was not only the complementary to Jacobs, but he was also the premier third down back.
Yeah.
Bradshaw was used as the change of pace guy. Ward was used as 1A plus third down. Jacobs was your main back. That's why he got 17 touches a game and he led the way. That's how the Giants broke it down when it was Earth, Wind, and Fire. If you want to use that as a base for where you want to alter the numbers this year, be my guest. You know, go right.
The only thing I will say, I mean, I think that's fair to look at the snaps and how the breakdown is, but I mean, that was a very good offensive line. One of the best rushing attacks in the NFL.
No question.
So that success, I think, enabled them to mix and match personnel because you knew whoever was going in there was getting some pretty big holes. I mean, that the game that stands out to me from that season, Paul, and you'll remember this, of course, the game against Carolina mm-hmm. at home late in the season.
Destroyed them.
What? Ward ran for over 200 yards, mm-hmm. if I'm correct, in that game.
It was huge.
And then I think, what was it, Jacobs or Bradshaw? Somebody else had triple digits. Two running backs in that
final
game.
Final numbers in that game.
Triple digits.
Let me see if we have the final numbers
I thought
numbers
in that
game.
We can look that up. I believe
Giants ran for
it was a ridiculous number of yardage.
300, let's see, 158. You know, the Saint, Tampa Bay was the 299 game. Tampa Bay was the 299 game. They ran for 299 yards against Tampa Bay.
But what? So then what were the totals against Carolina that year?
Hold on a second.
Could have sworn Carolina was that. I know Derek
second.
Ward had a great game.
Sorry, this is messed up.
Looking at the right,
I think
you're
looking at
the
wrong team. I'm looking at Carolina. That's what I'm looking at.
That's why.
301 yards
in that game.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if they ran for 301, then maybe somebody was just below 100.
And the numbers were. Oh, where are they here? Okay. Jesus, come on. Where are the numbers?
Let me try to work my magic here.
Yeah,
meantime.
Go ahead. Work your
I'll
computer.
See
if your computer's
better
than mine.
I thought maybe your
this
schedule would cooperate here.
What's wrong with this?
But I'll bring it up here. I got the quick format. Here we go. Carolina, the 34-28
215
game.
For Ward, 87 for Jacobs.
Okay, so it was just below 100 then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Derek Ward was the one that had the standout
15
game
for 215.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they ran the ball in that game 41 times for 301 yards. They averaged over 7 yards per carry. As a team.
Let's not kid ourselves.
And Derek Ward ran for over 14 yards per carry in that game.
And you know what? That's not happening with this team.
Well, and that's the only reason why I brought that up, just to at least provide some balance. But I get your point was more about the snap breakdown. It wasn't
that's what I was
saying.
Talking about.
No, and I completely understood that. I was just saying that it's a
how
little
how are you
bit
going to divvy the snaps up? There's no way they're going to run the ball like that. They were the number one rushing team in the league.
Yeah.
In fact, that 2018, folks, we all know that was the better team between the 2007 team, the 2008 team, even the 2011 team, the two teams that won trophies. The 2008 team was the best of all.
Oh, from a consistency standpoint, no
dominant
doubt about it.
Team.
I mean, I don't really think there's anything to debate.
Until the incident.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Yes, Rob is in Jacksonville. Rob, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Rob.
First of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to, I think, the person who's made the biggest impact in the last year for the Giants organization, and that's Aaron Wellman. If you go back and look at statistics for the last 3 years prior to this last year and the injuries that kept the players off the field and game time lost and compare it to the advancements that they made with Aaron on board, it's incredible. And I think that was the biggest difference in their positive season this last year.
In 2014 and 2015, over that two-year span, the Giants led the league in manpower games lost. I never got to see a final stat sheet on 2016, but you know it was a lot less. They were nowhere near the top as they had been the previous two seasons.
Yep. So I've given a shout-out to him because I think he's kind of under the radar, but I think he's one of the guys that's made the biggest difference in the organization.
I think plaudits are certainly well-deserved. I know everybody is very pleased with the job that he's done. And whatever part, and he'd be the first one to tell you this, Lady Luck helps him out too.
Yes.
But whatever part he had in helping reduce that injury list is certainly welcomed by everybody on the team.
Absolutely. I'd also like to chime in on the running back situation. I don't think we need to go out and get a free agent running back. I'm good with who we've got right now in-house. I think you're going to find that Gallman probably isn't going to make a major contribution to the running back situation for the first few games until he gets acclimated to the NFL level. But I think we've got pretty good runners in there right now that can carry the ball. And again, remember, we're not going to be running the ball that much. With the wide receivers and the tight end we've got now, it's going to be more of a balancing act. So I don't think we need to go out and get another free agent.
Well, here's the one problem that you have with this whole thing. When you rely too much on the pass in the red zone and in your goal line offense and in short yardage instances and certainly in the four-minute offense when you're trying to milk a lead, you put your defense in a really, really difficult situation. Just think about how many times the defense had to hold on last year in a final minute and a half of a game.
I know.
Do you really want to put them through that again?
Well, I don't think it's going to be quite so much that situation. I think what they're going to do is they're going to spread the defense out by using the four wide set when you get down near the goal line more and then pound it in with Gallman and Perkins.
Well, you know what? That'd be nice. I'd rather see a 230-pound back do it, but it's okay. You know, if it works, it works. That's the bottom line.
Well, but keep in mind, though, they did have somewhat of that personality – Not personality, I should say the personnel in place this year to also spread them out wide when they were in the red zone and the success rate wasn't nearly as high. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't disagree with your sentiments. It's just I don't think you can go in with the mindset, well, you know, you have Engram, you have Marshall, we'll just line up everybody out wide and then we'll easily run it in. I mean, this execution still needs to be there, and that remains
got to block it.
Yeah.
Sure.
You got to
cover. Understood.
Yeah.
Just remember,
thanks, guys.
All right,
Rob,
thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Just remember one thing. Brandon Jacobs does lead the Giants' all-time career rushing touchdown list, and there's a reason for that, because the man was brute force, especially near the goal line, and he would not let a Mack truck stand in his way in order to get the 6 points. And you need that. That's important, at least in my opinion. You know, he ran for 15 touchdowns in that 2008 season that we're talking about. Bradshaw never ran for more than the 9 touchdowns in any given season during his entire career with the Giants. You know, I understand that any running back who's paid should be able to get those crucial yards in critical situations. But if your line isn't blocking great, and again, I think they're going to improve, but folks, I just don't know to what degree. I'd rather be more confident with the bruiser and the thumper than relying on those guys to provide a clean hole for somebody to slice through. And that's what we're talking about, basically, with a Vereen, with a Perkins, even Gallman, who runs a little stronger and harder than Perkins does, but he's still more of a slicer. And that's an issue. If the hole's not there, where's the slicer going to go?
That's fair, and that's why I understand your point about perhaps exploring options in free agency, but I think what we just hinted at is the most important stat with the red zone conversation, Paul. It's not so much that the Giants need to go into this season thinking, you know, how do we get to run the ball an average of about 105 yards per game or something like that. What you would like to see, I think, overall big picture is the efficiency in rushing touchdowns improve, especially when you get into the red zone. And here's my point. Over the last two seasons, Paul, the Giants had 11 rushing touchdowns total in the last two seasons, 5 and 6 respectively in 15 and 16. They had 13 in 2014. Now, 2014 wasn't a great rushing year to begin with.
No.
But you had double the amount of rushing touchdowns in 14.
Then well, they were terrific in the red zone, and that's why.
So that's what needs to improve. What my point is that doesn't mean you want to settle for outside of the red zone, but the reason why you can't get away from running the ball in the red zone and just settling for spreading out four wide is because the rushing touchdown numbers are down so much. That means that when defenses get in the red zone, they know, you know what, more often than not, the Giants are going to settle for the air, and they're not going to look to pound it, and you don't want to become predictable.
Think about it. How many times were you watching a Giants game the last several years? They got the ball down to the 3-yard line, and it didn't matter what down it was. Okay, Eli's going shotgun, spread him out.
Drive stalled, then you settled for field goals. Why do you think Josh Brown was up there in terms of points over the last few seasons?
You know, I get the fact that every once in a while, and folks are going to be laughing now because I'm going back to my old school roots. No, I get the fact that every once in a while against a certain team, when the matchup favors spreading them out, okay, I understand that. But more often than not, you get inside somebody else's 3-yard line, you better punch that ball in. None of this fancy video game stuff. Not when you get inside the 3. No, no, I'm done with that.
Well, especially when you have 4 opportunities to punch it in. You figure 2 of the opportunities should be dictated on the ground early in the drive to give yourself the best opportunity to punch it in from 3 yards. I don't think that that's a stretch of an argument. Let's head back to the lines. Joe's in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Yeah, I'm going to give you his headaches there, too. I just want to follow up what that last caller says. With our personnel and the size now, you know what I mean? Our percentages may be a lot better, you know, in short yardage going to the pass. And I just see it too many times where everybody comes down in it when you go to the 2 tight ends and stuff like that, where, you know, our ball carriers just get the ball and they don't even get it right and they're being hit. You know, that's not even giving them a chance. This way, when you split them out, especially with the size of our receivers now and the tight ends, you know, where the holes might be better, because if everybody just jams it up in there, you have the linebackers, safeties coming in around the turns, or, you know what I mean, they're really overloading different gaps, and, you know, our percentages might be better. I look back on 2 years ago there, New England and Seattle there, when Seattle didn't run the ball. You know, but they don't have our personnel now, and this is the way we have to look at it, and this
Joe,
is the way I feel.
Let me take you back to 2008, Arizona Giants and the Patriots in the Super Bowl, 4th down and 1, in the final 2 minutes of the game before the Tyree helmet catch. What happened on that 4th down and 1? Do you know?
Oh,
remember?
Wait, I was thinking of something else. What you were saying, Giants and who, Paul?
Giants, Patriots, and the Arizona Super Bowl. 4th and 1 in the 2-minute drive before Tyree had the helmet catch. What happened on that 4th and 1 after Toomer caught the ball just a couple of links short of the first down? What did they do?
I think they pounded it up there with, I forget who
they
it
gave
was,
the ball to Brandon Jacobs, the
Jacobs.
Brahma
yeah,
Bull.
I believe it was him.
And
yeah.
he went behind yeah. right guard behind Richie Seibert. The Patriots collapsed the Giants' offensive line. Seibert went down. Jacobs tripped over his back, but his brute force and inertia from being the big bowling ball that he was carried him forward to the first down by a forearm.
Right.
I would maintain to you that if any other back had gotten that ball, except Brandon Jacobs, he may not have gotten the first down.
Right.
That's what the thumper does for you.
That's why, in a way, Paul, you're bringing up what I'm saying. You know, we don't have Brandon Jacobs, but we do have nice-sized receivers. I think we even stopped Dallas a few times on short yardage with our defensive line. You got to look at the matchups in that and with our personnel. We stopped Dallas a few times. I'd like to see how they were stuffed, even the best running backs anymore. You know what I mean? With percentages,
but hold on,
the best offensive lines.
Well,
you know, it's something to look at because you really have to take it into consideration, the size of our receivers and the way that they are very elusive, you know, with one cut and fast and the way Eli gets rid of the ball. So that's all I want to say. It's something to look at, and sometimes it's easier when you have them split out. The holes are bigger and easier. And I always like Darqua, the cut up in there, even the draw. You know, our percentages are a little better. And I look at our center. He's a smaller center, you know. So, but this is something we really have to look at, and I'm sure McAdoo will, you know. And thanks for taking my call. It's something to debate. That's all I can say.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so much. I think if you look at the Cowboys, though, as a comparison last year, I mean, Ezekiel Elliott had 15 touchdowns. So he had more rushing touchdowns and then some than the Giants alone. Now, I'm not saying every touchdown came from within 5 yards of the goal line. He did have some big touchdown runs. But if you look at the majority of his numbers, they also were able to punch it in within the red zone. So most good, solid rushing teams, same thing with Tennessee, with DeMarco Murray, as well as Henry, you know, they were also able to pound it in when they got within the red zone. And all you need to do is, I mean, just look at the red zone efficiency for these teams from last season. Tennessee was number one in the NFL last year in red zone efficiency. They scored touchdowns 72% of the time. Why? Because they had a very strong running game. Dallas was fifth in the NFL at 66%. So both of those teams that I just referenced, once again, it goes hand in hand. Buffalo was seventh. Buffalo had a very good rushing attack. David Johnson in Arizona. Arizona was sixth last year. These are synonymous with one another. When you have a good rushing attack, you usually are able to punch it in. So, you know, that's why it's so important, regardless of all of the weaponry you have in the passing game, to be able to have balance and to be efficient on the ground. Nobody's saying you got to run for 150 yards per game, but within 5 yards, within short yard situations, you should be able to capitalize.
Give
I don't think that's
number.
Asking for much.
Another number. Giants had 73 rushing first downs last year, dead last in the National Football League.
That says a lot. Yeah.
You know, it's not good.
I mean, that's where the numbers have to improve. A lot of people look at yardage per game, which is important. But I think for those of you, obviously, who are passionate and you watch every single down, you see the lack of efficiency in short yardage situations. That's where you want to be able to improve. Because, I mean, think about how many extra possessions, Paul, and downs you get as a result of being efficient in those short yardage situations. Mm-hmm. Time of possession goes up. First downs goes up. All of those things complement one another. Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Ken in New Jersey. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Ken.
I just wanted to talk about the power rankings that just came out. I'm not sure if you guys seen them. They have the Giants at number 7 and the Dallas Cowboys at number 6. And now I really can't understand it. I know the Cowboys have a good team. I know they do. But they lost, like, their entire defense, and they're starting all rookies on defense. They have no depth behind those rookies. How are they ranked ahead of – I don't get it. And that's without even putting in the fact that we beat them twice last year.
Well,
it just kills me.
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't care about power rankings. It's the least thing that I ever invest in. I don't care about it even during the course of the regular season. It's just somebody's random opinion. I wouldn't, though, say that they're starting rookies. That's a bit misleading, Ken. Dallas has some veterans that they did keep in the secondary. For example, Byron Jones is going to be one of their safeties. Jeff Heath may be another safety. Those two guys have plenty of experience. And they got rid of a lot of guys that, let's face it, were not efficient on defense. The Dallas secondary was a mess last year. So, I mean, it may be actually addition by subtraction if you break down their personnel. But with that being said, I still go back to how much stock are you going to put in power rankings when none of these teams have finalized their rosters? We're at the beginning of May. We haven't even started training camp, and nobody's been on the field. So it's like,
well,
I mean, at the end of the day.
Look at it this way. Look at it this way, my friend. If any Cowboys fan comes up to you and throws those rankings in your face, invite him to call you after week one of the regular season in the fall, because may not want to talk to you for months.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. I have Cowboy fan friends. I have Eagle fan friends. The Cowboy fans are by far the worst. But I'll tell you why the power rankings are kind of important. Now, Paul hates video game football, but me as a fan and every fan that I know play video game football. Now, when those power – they do everything by Pro Football Focus and power rankings. And the Dallas Cowboys, whether they go 4-12 the season before or 12-4, they are a top five team every year in that video game, and it's frustrating as heck. They got 20 quarterbacks rated above Eli Manning. Just the guy over in Buffalo is one of them. You know, it's a little bit much to take when you're really proud of your football team.
Ken, who put out these power rankings that you're looking at? Just out of curiosity.
I, I couldn't remember who actually put them out, but I do know that they came from NFL Network and the guys over there. I'm not exactly positive which one did it, but it's frustrating because I know the Giants have definitely improved their offense on this, in this draft and in this free agency, and their defense at the very worst is going to be. Hopefully, we're not supposed to, you know, go from one year to the next, but hopefully at the very worst, it'll be top five like it was last year.
Well, on paper, the personnel groupings are together, but, I mean, let's face it, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but we've seen teams that excel one year because of the parity in the National Football League, and even if you have the same nucleus intact, you can't guarantee that that's going to carry over. So that's another reason why I really don't put a lot of stock in power rankings, because what a team looks like on paper does not always translate to the football field. And I think we've had more than enough examples to see that. And I'm looking at our own site, Giants.com, and they did an article that gave you the power rankings. It looks like Fox Sports did one, Sports Illustrated, CBS Sports, NFL.com, ESPN, USA Today. The Giants are ranked anywhere from 5 to 10 in these various power rankings. They're as high as 5 with CBS Sports, and in that one, the Cowboys are 9th. And then they're as low as 10 in USA Today, and in that one, the Cowboys are 5th. So, you know, once again, everybody's going to fluctuate based on their opinions.
Yeah, I get it. There's some kind of bias out there. Everybody's got a favorite team. I understand. Oh, and Paul, in those video games, you can't run the ball with the Giants on 1st, 2nd, and 3rd and 3 at the goal line. You can't do it. You can't do it. What I do is I line up a 2 tight end set. I run a drag route with Will Ty, a little 3-yard drag route, and it's a touchdown every time.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You can do it.
Hopefully,
I've been stopped 4 downs in a row.
Hopefully, this year's video game will allow you to bring in Fluker as a 6th lineman. How about that?
Well, and hopefully they have Brett Elliott on the roster, too.
And Ellison.
Ellison, excuse me, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe that'll be a little different.
Well, Ingram's going to split the seam anyway. It's going to be 4 wides all year long this year.
You guys
have a great day. Thanks for answering my question.
All right, Ken. Thanks for the phone call.
Here's stats. 1st and goal from the 5 or closer this past season. Giants had 13 opportunities and only got 8 touchdowns.
So that's including rushing.
That's
obviously,
first and goal from the 5 or closer and only 8 touchdowns. Which, by the way, in that situation, the NFL average was 13 touchdowns on 16 opportunities. The Giants with only 8 touchdowns was tied for the 2nd fewest in the league, 1 behind the L.A. Rams.
Now, just out of curiosity, based on that list, who was top 5? Because I guarantee you it's teams that were able to run the football.
Arizona with 23 out of 26. Atlanta, 20 out
of
24.
Ran the football last year.
Oakland, 19 out of 23. And New England, 15 out of 21.
New England, even with its 17-head monster running backfield, they also ran the football. I mean, that's what all of those teams have in common.
New England had a power back that ran for double digits in touchdowns.
Yes, he did. Indeed.
He happens to be a free agent.
Yes. Well, we know what you're hinting at.
I'm just saying.
You don't even have to say the name. Yes.
I didn't mention anybody's name.
But New England.
Just giving you facts.
New England, I would say, also mixes and matches its running backs more so than any other team in the NFL. And despite that, there still tends to be continuity. So, I mean, they may be the exception to the rule, even though they don't consistently have the same back. Let's head back to the phone lines. Peter is in Fort Lauderdale. Peter, what's happening?
Hi, good afternoon. Got a couple of questions. First thing is, on the quarterback, we drafted a quarterback. Hello?
Yes. We're listening. Yeah, Davis Webb.
Oh, yeah. So we drafted a quarterback. I was watching his highlights. He looks a little stiff in the pocket, and don't we need somebody who's a little bit more mobile to offset some of the deficiencies on the offensive line? And my other question is, what happened to Ryan Nassib?
Free agent.
Coming off elbow surgery.
They just decided that after 3 years that, goodbye, and we're going to get somebody brand new?
He's coming off of elbow surgery late last season, and the truth is he was an unrestricted free agent, and at the moment he's out on the street, and I have not heard of his health.
Yeah.
And even if he has gone to any workouts, because if he has, it's been kept quiet. So I think first thing he's got to do is figure out, A, does he still want to play? B, can his arm hold up? And C, is he going to be able to get some interviews and some workouts going? But you can't count on him because you just don't know what the situation is with his arm. And in terms of your other question, look, Davis Webb is not supposed to play for at least 2 to 3 years, if not longer. So don't gauge what you saw behind this offensive line, because that's
change.
Not the plan. Yeah. And quite honestly, he does have some mobility within the pocket. He's certainly not Fran Tarkenton. But I would venture to say he can move within the pocket well enough. You know, people used to say Dan Marino was a statue. That was so not true. He was able to sidestep and feel the pressure and do what he needed to do within the pocket to
get
the ball off.
He had a pocket presence that was unbelievable.
And I believe Davis Webb has that as well.
I sometimes don't think sometimes Eli does and sometimes he doesn't.
That
so
is
my
true.
Concern then is, what do you think, what is your feeling right now with where we stand on the offensive line as far as giving Eli that extra second or two to be able to pick the defenses apart?
I'm going to give you two real quick answers to this. A, the Giants have many more weapons for him to choose from, so it should be a faster or quicker decision that he'll be able to make to find the open guy, because the matchup should be in the Giants' favor across the field as opposed to always looking for OBJ all the time. And number two, as I've said a billion times, I truly believe that the blocking of this offensive line will be better. I think Flowers is improving. I think Hart's improving. I think Fluker's an improvement. Ellison's going to help them out. I mean, with those two things combined, I don't think you've got to worry much about the passing game.
I think a healthy blocking tight end.
But the question then becomes on the running game, because of the fact that with the passing game, you know, bing, 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 we score in like 3 minutes, and then our defense is on the field forever because we're going running up and down the field.
It is concerned.
But you need a running game to slow it down, to make sure your defense can get a rest. Is the offensive line going to be able to do that as well?
Well, but remember, also the way to milk the clock and have lengthy drives is also by using your running backs as receivers too. And I think with Shane Vereen healthy, you know, that could change things. Remember, he was banged up and sidelined for all of last season for the most part. You know, we'll see whether or not Sean Drone can carve out a role. He's another guy that has the ability to catch the football, and so does Paul Perkins. You don't have to run the football to pick up that yardage. You just need to be efficient in how you utilize your personnel in your backfield. The other thing I was going to say, Peter, is I think the blocking tight end, having a healthy blocking tight end. Remember, you know, Will Johnson was expected to have a role last season, the fullback slash tight end. He got hurt. If Ellison can stay healthy, if he's available for 16 games, we'll get to see how they utilize somebody that is solely known for his blocking prowess, and I think that could also help the offensive line overall, even if you don't dramatically change the personnel within the five that play the O-line.
Well, down here, there's a lot of Giant fans down here in Fort Lauderdale, and we've all been, the last couple of years, it's been wait till next year, so we're hoping, you know, this year is going to be a really good year, because last year was decent, and we're just looking for keeping our fingers crossed.
You guys going to be at the Buccaneers game?
If we can get up to Tampa, maybe we'll do that. Depends on what's going on in the weekend. But quite honestly, I mean, we're flying Giants flags like crazy. So,
well, I'll tell you what. The beauty of it is, and thanks for the phone call. Beauty of it is, the Giants usually get a lot of support in Tampa when they go down there to play the Buccaneers, and that goes back a ways now too. I mean, I remember at the end of the 2007 season in the playoffs, when they went down there to Tampa, and plenty of blue shirts, and every time they made a play, you could hear the crowd roar for them. It's a lot of Giants support down there in Florida.
Well, I would say the Giants fan base overall, like some of the other historical franchises, travel well.
Yeah,
now maybe
that too.
Maybe you see it more in Tampa than perhaps some of the other cities, but there's a presence when the team is on the road. You can't necessarily say that about most teams, and I think that's because of the history of the team, mm-hmm. you have fans that are transplanted across the country.
Well, you get a lot of New Yorkers who retired too.
Of course. Well, I mean, I was going to get to that. I was waiting for you to maybe head in that direction. I didn't want to make everybody feel old.
You're talking old. You know, getting me involved in the conversation.
Well, yes, you took the words right out of my mouth. Somebody who we don't necessarily want to take the words out of mouths is Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
All right.
Hey, guys. Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance.
Hi.
Hey, I totally agree with you, Paul. I think, I hope McAdoo and folks learned their lesson last year by not having a fullback, by not having a blocking tight end. And this year they got Brett Butler, gone with the wind. So hopefully this guy is going to be our blocking tight end, and possibly, I guess he did block some in fullback position. But we also got this undrafted free agent from San Jose State, fullback, who is a brute. This guy, I don't know if he'll make the team, but this guy looks like he can block.
Charlie, and, I just want to address that before you go any further, because I know a lot of fans look at the internet and they see guys who are named all over the place. You're talking about a guy named Sean Smith. He's a fullback, okay, barely touched the ball at San Diego State. If you'll look at his college numbers, barely touched the ball. He's purely a blocker. And he goes about 245 pounds, and if you look at some of the pictures of him on the internet, the guy looks like a cyborg. I mean, he is totally cut out of stone. But here's what I would say, and this is my point, okay? My point is, no matter what you read, every spring after the draft, teams talk to these undrafted rookie free agents, and they think they've got a handshake deal, they've got a verbal deal. It's almost like high school kids going to college. Until they get the signature on the paper, and, oh, that's a signed contract, the guy is not in the fold. And so the Giants have rookie minicamp on Friday. So Friday morning, all these guys that they have talked to, and they have maybe made handshake deals with, or maybe gotten verbal agreements from, these guys are going to be coming in here probably Thursday to the airport. They'll be checking in. And on Friday morning, when they get to the facility and they prepare for their, quote, first day of work, that's when they'll actually sign their contracts before they go out onto the field and practice for the first time. Until that happens, the guy is not the property of the organization. So I caution you, be very, very careful when you start throwing these names around, because you know what? That's about as valuable as the computer you have on your desk, which isn't much if it falls and breaks, just like if a guy breaks his verbal agreement and doesn't come to the team.
All I'm saying is that, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, he's been touted to be a Giant. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, we'll know Friday when he comes in and signs on the dotted line. But that goes for, you know, everybody else. It goes for Wheeler. It goes for, you know, all these guys
who are
undrafted free agents. But all I'm trying to say from this is that I am hoping that we learn from our mistake. And if we don't go into this season with a thumper like Blunt to, you know, be able to run the ball in those critical situations, then we haven't learned anything. But I think maybe we have, because I think, you know, them getting a tight end that can actually block and also bring in a couple of guys through undrafted free agents, if they sign with us, a caveat, I'll throw that to you, Paul.
Thank you, Charlie.
There's some fullbacks there.
I want to make something clear. I did that not for you. I did that for all the other viewers and listeners on the program who are going gaga goo-goo on the web and Twitter about all these names they see. I just want to make it clear to them how it works. Not so much for you, because I think you get it. But everybody else out there needs to just relax.
Well, and this is also important to note. I mean, you were touching on this, Paul. Everybody invited to rookie minicamp doesn't all of a sudden go on the roster, too.
That's also correct.
I mean, so just because
sometimes
the guys,
they don't get signed.
Yeah, I mean,
they sign a waiver to practice, and then by the end of the day, they're showing the door sometimes.
This weekend is going to be rookie minicamp. Then after rookie minicamp, they see who they like, and then they start finalizing the 90-man roster. The rookie minicamp roster is completely separate from the 90-man roster. That's also important. So
absolutely,
you know, all of these reports, and the Giants have not released who officially is going to be here at rookie minicamp. They'll do that later in the week. But anybody that is in rookie minicamp is not guaranteed to then join the team for the 90-man. That's important to note as well. Yeah.
Right, and I hope they have Air Canada standing by, because they got a bunch of offensive linemen from Canada coming in. So they better have it ready
well,
to
you know
go
what?
Out,
listen,
because
Charlie,
that's probably what's going to happen with
you
them.
You can make all the jokes you want, and I know you have some material you're still dusting
Brett Jones
off.
Has been an asset.
I was just going to say that, but Brett Jones, in all seriousness, actually turned out to be very valuable last season.
Yeah, but these guys are kids from college. They're not
even
CFL
players. Well, I'm not saying they're
going to
make the team, but the point is, you know, I saw the little underlying chuckle there out of you, Mr. Chuckles, And, you know, Brett Jones, the last time I checked, was a Canadian
Charlie,
player.
Charlie, bottom line, made the roster. Anybody who can come in here and help the depth chart on that O-line, where you're probably going to keep nine, is a welcome addition, okay? That's the bottom
line.
All
right. Let's just get a thumper. Let's get Blunt. I don't know why we're waiting. Just sign him. Pay him. Pay the man, and we'll be really good. And P-Dot, you'll be enjoying this season, I tell you, if he gets on our team. Thanks, guys.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah, again, I wasn't trying to get on Charlie's case, but as long as
you don't
as
have
he
to apologize to me if you get on Charlie's case.
As long as he just brought up the fact that there are undrafted rookie free agents that people are talking about and eager to see, I just wanted to make sure that everybody out there understands the parameters under which these guys are invited and then maybe follow through and then maybe get signed to the 90-man roster. There are still ifs before that guy actually makes it to the real training camp in July. So just be a little bit cautious when you see all these names out there, because let me tell you something. There have been times, and I know this for a fact, that guys have done handshake deals or verbal deals with a team after the draft, and then all of a sudden 2 days later, guess what? They wind up jumping ship, and they wind up going to another team's rookie minicamp because maybe that team sweetened the pot on a little signing bonus, or maybe, if you come to us, we'll guarantee you a spot on the 90. Oh, really? You're going to do that for me? Okay, I'm jumping ship on that other team.
More attractive.
I'm going
offer.
To them.
Yeah.
It does happen. It does happen. Guys get swiped out from under you at this particular time of the year.
That's why you look at the internet reports, but nothing's going to be finalized until the latter part of the week when rookie minicamp arrives and they actually show up, like you said, and they sign on the dotted line. Anything can happen, though, during the course of the week. Somebody could come with a more attractive offer, and that undrafted free agent could join somebody else's
and
minicamp.
That's precisely why nobody on this show has been talking about any of those players in particular outside of the players that for some reason, I guess, Jerry Reese felt very confident in naming Wheeler and the lineman. I forget the other lineman that he named. He felt very confident in doing so. Obviously, he knows a little bit more about their situations than we do.
Guarantees or
because
something
he
like that
mentioned their names.
Yeah.
But and that's why we'll talk about those guys. But other than that, you can't talk about these guys because you just don't know if they're going to be here.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us here, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. As we head back to the lines, we hear from Marquise in California. Marquise, what's happening?
Hey, man, how's it going?
Doing well. How's things with you?
I'm fine, man. What's going on, Paul? How are you doing today?
Hi. Nice day. How are you?
I'm fine. The reason why I'm calling is I wanted to talk and discuss the running game and Wayne Gallman. I think Wayne Gallman has the perks to really be the starting running back this season. I think he can provide the power running that you guys are looking for. And I think another thing, if LeGarrette Blount is still out there, I think we would have signed him by now or had some type of discussion with him or something by now. Nothing has came up. I heard that the Detroit Lions was in the mix.
There was a report last week, correct, that the Lions reportedly have interest as well. And in that report also, it did mention the Giants. Here's the one thing I'll add, and I'll let you continue, Marquise. A lot of veterans in the position of LeGarrette Blount, what happens more often than not is they don't want to take part in these off-season activities because they're so well-established. So they'll wait till training camp starts, and then they'll say, you know what, this team suffered an injury in the backfield. There's a nice opportunity. Get some guarantees, and I'll join the team. Anquan Boldin is another one. I guarantee you he's going to sign a deal before the start of training camp because he's already come out and said he wants to continue to play.
Yeah.
Leon Hall last year waited till
he was coming off back surgery.
But what I'm saying is a lot of these established vets
they do
feel as if they don't need to come in and compete for a role, they're okay waiting till training camp. So I wouldn't necessarily read into the fact that he hasn't signed anywhere yet.
From the team's perspective, you'd like the guy in sooner rather than later,
course,
to acclimate himself
no
to your
doubt.
Playbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not always what the team wants because it takes two to make a deal.
Yes.
Yeah. But 1,100 yards with 18 touchdowns, I think that would be at a big market for you if you was LeGarrette Blount. But
well, he's 30 years old. No, he's 30 years old, and that's the magic number when everybody in the NFL says running backs take a dive. And so, you know, and last year was a career year for him. If you look at the rest of his resume, he has not necessarily been a bell cow for more than two of his NFL seasons. He's had injury issues. You know, remember how he kind of got himself kicked out of Pittsburgh intentionally? You know, he hasn't exactly been the poster child for the perfect teammate or the perfect guy to bring in. You know, there are some issues there you got to work through. You know, if he wants to come here, that's half the battle. But, you know, you'd want to sit down. I think my thought on this, kick the tires. You know, talk to him. Bring him in for a workout. Bring him in for an interview. Kick the tires. Yeah. And if he says the right things and you feel comfortable, well, then he's the thumper that you're missing. If not, then maybe you don't sign him. I mean, maybe he comes in, sits down, has an interview, and it doesn't go well. Well, then you show him the door.
Well, what do you guys want to happen then?
I quite frankly would hope that it would work out because I think he can be an asset.
I can see them sticking with their personnel, and I think that they could find roles to develop some of the young guys like Wayne Goldman, who you mentioned. Paul Perkins, I think, is more than capable of being the leading back, and Ben McAdoo indicated that. So, I mean, I don't think it would hurt to add a guy like LeGarrette Blount, but I could also see the Giants sticking with who they have currently on the roster and making the most of that. Because at the end of the day, you know, even if you bring in a guy like LeGarrette Blount, you know, that's not going to be a guy that you're going to lean on for years to come. Perkins and Goldman are going to be guys you're going to lean on for years to come. And I think giving them carries early in their career can certainly help them down the road.
Except that I'd like to see the Giants win this year.
Oh, and I get that. Mentality.
And LeGarrette Blount is a hold-the-fort guy who can help you win right away while Goldman learns, much like Davis Webb is going to have to learn how to play quarterback.
And I think that's fair. But my other comment would be what you just hinted at, and I'm looking at his numbers. Last year was just the second time in Blount's career he played all 16 games. Mm-hmm. It was the second time he ran for over 1,000 yards, the first time since his rookie year, and he had 18 touchdowns last year. His previous high was 7 in 2013. So the last 3 years prior to 2016, he had a total of 11 touchdowns. He had 7 more than the 3 previous years combined in 2016 alone.
Again, this will depend now how you're going to use him. And the role that I see him being used at, he would fit it perfectly for the Giants. And I also think, you know, here's the thing. If LeGarrette Blount comes here, okay, and this is what could be sticky about it. And by the way, Gallman's 6 feet, 210 pounds, which is about 20 pounds less, maybe even 25 less than LeGarrette Blount, who's listed at 230, but I think actually plays at about 235. So that's a lot of beef we're talking about. But here's the thing. Here's where it gets tricky with Blount. Is Blount going to want to go to a team that's going to say, look, you're going to be our short yardage red zone back and our four-minute offense back? Which means, does he get 10 touches a game?
And is he content with that?
Now, is that okay if he gets 10 touches a game and scores, you know, 12 touchdowns for the season? Well, that's great, and that helps the Giants win if they add him. But is that going to fatten up his stat pack? Is that going to fatten up his wallet? Because chances are he's going to be asked to sign a low base with probably incentives in it.
And so now, to reach those incentives,
he's going to say, well, I want more carries. I want more yards. Yeah. I got to get more money. See, this gets a little tricky. Well, I think he's a great fit for them. I don't know that the Giants are a great fit for him.
And I don't see them sacrificing Paul Perkins' touches to appease to LeGarrette
Blount. No, you're not going to do that.
And I don't think you should do that because I don't think that helps you in the long run.
What you do is you tell LeGarrette Blount, this is the role we have for you.
And are you content with that?
Right.
I think we should just go ahead and pass up on LeGarrette Blount and just go with our backfield we have now, because that's a lot of problems with that going in. That's tricky, like you said, Paul. But another thing I want to get to, and I'm going to go ahead and get up out of here, is, and I thank you guys for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for the
Davis,
call.
The Davis Webb, people that's calling about Davis Webb, guys, he's not going to play for the next 2 or 3 years, okay?
I know.
Please stop calling. Now, call in 2 or 3 years now. Then we can talk about Davis Webb. And he's not a bad pick for the people that's out there. They're just panicking because they want mobile quarterbacks and all this. He's okay. Trust me, guys. He's okay. He's running behind a two-time Super Bowl champ. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Lance. Have a good day.
You too. Appreciate the call.
Good call.
Yeah, I think that last statement summarized things very appropriately. That's a down-the-road investment. That's nothing about 2017.
Just remember, the Giants' production out of the third round will come from Darian Thompson this year. Think of him as this year's third-round pick because he spent last season on IR. Don't even think about Davis Webb.
Redshirt year, 2016, for Darian Thompson. So he fills in where Davis Webb is, but Webb is obviously, well, you hope he's not going to see the field
in 2017.
Think of him
as pick 3A.
Yeah. Somebody that, like I said, you're investing in, and you hope obviously can develop so that when Eli does decide to call it quits, whenever he does, there's an experienced player behind him. And I think it's going to help him in the long run based on the model we've seen where, you know, most quarterbacks who have the benefit to play behind a veteran, Paul, and then when they are fortunate enough that they are called upon to be the starter, watching from the sidelines and being in the classroom can help. Now, that doesn't mean that Davis Webb is going to be the next Aaron Rodgers. That's not what I'm saying. But I think from his perspective, it's much better to walk into a situation where it's not baptism by fire and you're not thrown into a starting job and you don't have to rescue a team where he can sit back, he can learn, he can also make the transition from a Cal offense that is not necessarily a pro-style offense to what the Giants are going to run. So, you know, he's going to have the time to develop, which I think will at least help him on an individual standpoint moving forward. All right, with that being said, we appreciate all the phone calls and the good conversation here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll be with you each and every weekday the remainder of the week. Friday is the start of rookie minicamp, so as we get closer, we'll start to look ahead to what to expect on Friday as well as the weekend, and we'll start to look much closer at the actual roster now that the draft is over, and we'll have some guests to weigh in on that as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning into Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.